Well, I hope your week has been going well. This month has been an amazing month for us here at Hillcrest, especially for myself, Pastor Trina, and Pastor Brian. With Pastor Appreciation Month, we have been so encouraged through your words of encouragement, your prayers, just the kind things that have been done to us. People have brought meals over to our house. There have been baked goods that have been brought here at the church. We are hardly fitting in our clothes by the end of October, but we are so thankful that the next couple of months are low-calorie months anyways. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, we've got some work to do between now and the holidays, but thank you. We certainly appreciate that and have heard and sensed and experienced your love for us. We do thank you for that. This morning, we are going to be talking about the titles that we hold in our families. And there's actually a science to these titles. Sometimes I think, you know, we understand the basic titles, right? We've got, like, you know, we know who mom and dad are, you know, brother and sister, aunts, uncles, cousins. But it gets really confusing when we start to break it down further than that and we talk about, okay, so what is a first cousin versus a second cousin versus a third cousin? Or what is a first cousin once removed? Is that just another way of saying second cousin? So I want to break this down for you today because I hear this said by so many people where they'll say, oh yeah, I've got this, I think they're like my second or third cousin. It's basically just saying, I'm not sure where they fit, so I'm going to throw the cousin label on them, and somehow we're family. We're just not really sure how. So we're going to start with what's the simplest. That's you, okay? And you have parents, okay? Now, with your parents, if the only way this works where you have cousins is if one of your parents, either your mother or your father, had a sibling, okay? A brother or sister. And if you did, then you have an aunt or an uncle. I'm going to say aunt this morning as I talk about the sibling side of a parent, but obviously aunt or uncle works for this. And if you have an aunt or uncle and they have a child, that is your what? Your cousin, yes. Do you know what kind of cousin? That's right, yeah, that's your first cousin. You guys are so smart, all right? Now, your first cousin has a child. What is that to you? What is that relationship? What's the title to you? Your first cousin has a child. That is your... I hear first cousin, second cousin. I think I heard Art say first cousin once removed. Well, the correct answer is... Art's got it right. First cousin, once removed. Why? Because it's still your first cousin. Came from your first cousin. And all cousins born, all children born under these cousins will always be first cousins. And the once removed is how many times they're removed from your generation. Okay? So they're a generation younger than you. They're that next generation. So they're a generation once removed. So that's why it's your first cousin, once removed. See? You guys got it. Simple. Let's go to your grandparent, okay? So you have a grandparent, and if your grandparent had a sibling, that sibling would be called your what? That's right, your great aunt or uncle. We're using aunt this morning, so this would be your great aunt. If your great aunt has a child, what is that child relationship to you? Second cousin, I hear. You're already lost. This is really close to your nuclear family, right? Yeah, so if your grandparent, you have great aunt or great uncle, and they have a sibling, what are they to you? They're your first cousin once removed. What? Yes, because they're still your first cousin. They're still from that first line from your grandparents, but still a first cousin. Anytime that first child is born from your immediate family, it's always going to be a first cousin. And it is how many generations away from you? One. Doesn't matter if it's up or down. Now, you might say, they should have something to determine whether it's up or down. You've got to be kidding. It's already crazy enough to figure this out. Okay? So first cousin once removed could be older than you or could be younger than you, but if it's one generation away from you, that's once removed, but it's still your first cousin. So now your older cousin, once removed, has a child. What is that? second cousin. And if that second cousin has a child, that's your second cousin once removed. Do you see the line where it's where you are? This is your generation. So you have a first cousin and a second cousin. The second cousin came from your great aunt, whose parents were your first cousin once removed, that gets yourself to your great aunt. See, it's so simple. So simple. And if they have a child, obviously they're your second cousin, so that's the second cousin once removed. This is really easy stuff. Great-grandparent. Great-grandparent has sibling. That is your what? That's right. That's your great-grand-aunt. Your great-grand-aunt has a child. That is your? Oh, my word. You are so much smarter than first service. Like, so they were, at this point, they were silent. They're like, we have no idea. Yes, this is because it's that first child. It is always going to be your first cousin, but this is twice removed because this is your great grand aunt. See, two generations up, so that's why it's second removed, which means that obviously their child would be a. Second cousin once removed, which then their child would then be your third cousin, and their child would be third cousin once removed. Now, what if you have a great-great-grandparent? But you can see this is where you'll get your fourth cousin, but your fourth cousin's parent is your third cousin once removed, whose parent is your second cousin twice removed, and then which then is your first cousin thrice removed, because it's three generations. Duh. See, now it makes perfect sense. The thing is most of us have no clue who these people are. But yet they are in there. They're in our relationship. So that's the way that we figure all this stuff out. And today, I want to talk about these titles, because these titles are very, very important in our family dynamics. And the Bible touches on these different titles that we have, and there is a significance to doing well with the titles that we're given. There's something about being a follower of Christ with these titles, because the Bible talks about these titles. In fact, talks about being an uncle 195 times, a wife 325 times, daughter 462 times, father 1,103 times the Bible talks about it, son 2,544. And realize that like the 2,544 times talks about son, many of those are not speaking only to a male heir, but can be to the children in general, a son or a daughter. Same thing with the daughter can be also applied to a son or a mother to a father or a husband and wife together. So these things are, many of them are universal in the way that we understand these dynamics and these relationships. And the goal today for us is to live up to the titles that we have. Each of you have titles that you hold. And when we don't live up to these titles, that's where the problems creep in. Many of the counseling sessions in my office are based on the brokenness or not doing well within these titles. And so we need to do well in these titles. We need to understand what they are and how to do well within these various titles that we have. Every one of you here is either a son or a daughter. You have that title. And when it comes to that title, the Bible has a lot to say about it. In fact, specifically to sons, it says that if a son doesn't do well with this title, that he becomes a weight to the family, a burden to the family, if he doesn't do well as what a son is supposed to do. So it's important that we know what these roles are, what these titles are, and how to live within these titles. There could be a title in your future that you want to have that you currently don't have. Maybe you want to have the title of husband, or you want to have the title of wife. You want to have the title of mom or the title of dad. But I want to encourage you today not to take on titles that you are not ready for. Not to take on titles that you have not prepared well for, or that you have not done what you need to do to be able to take on that title. Some titles you take on, and some titles are just given to you. They're just something that you end up taking on because of your role in the world and the choices of others. You end up taking on some of these titles. But just because you want a particular title or just because you get a particular title doesn't mean the skill set for doing well with that title comes with it. It's kind of like someone that's really good at sports and then you say, you're now a role model. Well, being good at sports doesn't necessarily make you a role model. That's something you have to work into. That's something you have to develop. And if you're going to be that down the line, it's good to start trying to be that role model today so that when that opportunity comes, you have prepared yourself for that title that's coming. And whether it's a mom or dad or husband or wife, you can start working towards those titles in the way of preparing for some of those things, even though you may not have that title quite yet. For example, you take kids, like a little girl, and I know I get into stereotypes here, so I'm not trying to pigeonhole somebody, but you know, I raised a girl, and as she grew up, she did a lot of things that you would typically say girls do, and there were times that she was a mother to these baby dolls that she had. Now, I get it. Like, you know, you say, well, a boy could do it. I know. That's not even for a message. Just have that talk somewhere else. I'm just saying, like, in my family, that's kind of how that was, and I think it's because she was mothered by my wife, and then she saw that in my grandmother, and that's just kind of been in our family history or heritage, and that's what she observed. So when it came to her little baby dolls, she held them, and she changed them, and she did all the things that she thought a mother was supposed to do. She had no idea what the title of mother was at such a young age. She now is a real mother, and she can't put that baby doll up on the shelf. Like, it's constant. She has learned a few things on what that title means. That title means she's all done sleeping. My granddaughter is about 3 months old, and my daughter has yet to have a full night's sleep, and I don't have the heart to tell her that might not be it for another year or more. She, for 3 months, hasn't eaten a hot meal. Because it's always, you know, you make it, and then all of a sudden the baby, and you're holding the baby, and everybody else is eating, and we try to take the baby when she's over so she can eat something hot. But that's just, these are things that when she was playing, trying to play that title, she didn't know what it really meant to be a mother. And now she's learning what that really means to be a mother. And so when we take on these titles, they come with them tremendous responsibilities. And one of the things that we learn when it comes to these titles is it requires us to lose our selfishness and become selfless in these titles that we have. Early on in my ministry, I was really challenged because as I was getting ready to do the very first wedding, actually I had completed that first wedding and it didn't go so well. And it wasn't all me, but it was partly me. But, you know, it was my first time doing it. And then I started to get worried because I was seeing on television shows and TV and just, you know, things that you encounter in life. It seems like, especially with chick flicks, at the wedding, something always goes awry. You know, like someone doesn't show up for the wedding. And I thought, what do you do? Like, as a pastor, what would I do if, like, the groom doesn't show up or the bride doesn't show up? And not because they're late, but because they don't want to get married. Like, what will I do? So I had a pastoral friend of mine, a mentor of mine, and I went to him. He'd been in ministry many years, and I said, what do you do in this situation? He said, first of all, it's never happened to me. He said, secondly, though, he said, I had a mentor tell me something. I'm going to pass it on to you. He said, what you do is you stand up in front of everybody, because everyone's going to be looking at you to figure out what to do, because all the guests are there, and they're all trying to figure out what's going on. The piano player has played the same song 18 times in a row, and you realize this isn't happening. He said, you stand up in front of everybody, and you say, the bride and groom today have decided not to get married because they're not ready. And he said, that should at least ease some people, because people don't want you to get married if you're not ready to get married, because that's not going to go well. If you're not ready, who cares that everybody showed up? Who cares that everybody's dressed up? Who cares that this venue has been reserved? If you're not ready, it's best that you don't get married. So he said, that's what you say. But he said, then you also say, but since the food has been prepared, we're still going to eat. Because he said, never let food go to waste. So that was his advice to me. I've never had to use it, but I realized that it is best if a couple doesn't want to get married, the last thing they should be getting is pressure from everyone to get down that aisle together, that they should be allowed to say, even though we've gone this far with it, we're not ready. We're not ready to take on that title yet, for whatever reason that might be. Because if you're not ready to take on a title, you shouldn't take it on. And there are titles that are going to come to you that you're not taking on, but are going to be given to you, and you need to be preparing now for those titles as you know that they will be coming in your life, or the potential for some of those titles to be coming. What titles do you hold? I am a son, a son-in-law, a brother, brother-in-law. I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm an uncle, I'm a grandfather, I'm a grandson, I'm a nephew, and apparently I'm a third cousin once removed, but I don't know that person, but I am. The very first title I ever held was the title of son, and that was the first title you held as well, son or daughter. That's the first title. It was given to you the moment that you were born. Parent held you up and said, this is my son, this is my daughter. And that was your title. You held that title, and you have to work into, you have to live up to, you have to do well within that title, because there's a responsibility that comes with it. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 2, it says, honor your father and mother, and this is the first commandment with a promise. This passage in Ephesians is pointing all the way back to the Ten Commandments, where one of the commandments is to honor your mother and your father, to honor them. And so we are called to honor our parents, and it doesn't matter whether you're in the home or no longer in the home and now you're an adult. We are still called to honor our parents. And the promise that goes with it is that if you do well in honoring them, it's going to go well for you. Life is going to go well for you. In fact, it kind of communicates it as you will live a long life, not as if you're going to have more years than another person per se, but that the benefits in your life as learning and having good instruction and honoring them in this process, that you're going to have a better shot at things than others will, and that it will go well for you. Not that you'll be rich, but that you'll have less mistakes you're going to make because you learned well from your parents. So the more that we do in our growing up years in honoring mom and dad, and then we can continue that honoring as we get older, there's a promise that is attached to this command. And this is what we are commanded to do. And the command from God is not dependent on how much you like your parents. It's not dependent on how much you feel your parents deserve honor. It has nothing to do with deserve. Because no parents are perfect. There's not one parent out there that is perfect. And there are some parents out there that have majored on imperfections. So much so that they have made their home unsafe. They have been unfit as parents. And some have even abused their own children. But even in a healthy parent role, however you would define healthy in your understanding, that even in that healthy parent role, kids will not always like the parenting that is provided to them. But honor of parents transcends all of that. It transcends the good parent to the one that does not, in our minds, even deserve honor. That the honor that we're called to give transcends all of that. When I look at life with kids, you know, we want to remember a couple of things. And one of the things, and I said this earlier in a previous message, is that as a parent, you can just feel like a failure all the time. There always are mistakes you're making. You're learning after the fact, but you've already messed up your kids. I mean, I've looked at my kids many times, and I've said, that is probably going to be a therapy session for them someday. Like, why did I do that? And you can't always take those things back. I mean, you can apologize. That's great to do as a parent, is to apologize. It lets a kid know that you are working at this and that you are not perfect and that you can own up to mistakes. It helps them to own up to mistakes in their lives, too. It's a healthier relationship if we can do this. But still, you make mistakes along the way. And even as your kids move on and they go out of the house, they're not going to be doing things the way that you would do them. And they're also not going to always be making good decisions as they leave the house. And so I want to remind you as parents that good parenting is about what it is that you are giving them. The training, the teaching, the encouragement, the correction, even the discipline. It's about what you give them, not necessarily what they do with it. We hope they do well with it. And if they're still in the home and they're not doing well with it, that's another opportunity to correct. But the focus has got to be what you are providing them. The love, the showing of forgiveness, all the things of what parenting is that we give to them, that's what's really important. They're going to choose in life what they do with those things. You're not going to have near as much say on that. But you have to provide what they can at least lean back on if they are making poor decisions or they find themselves in a tough spot. All of these little glass beads up here, each one represents a single week. And so I've got 7 vials of them here. Cylinders of them, and you say, holy smokes, well, that's a lot of them. So how many weeks is this? This is the amount of weeks for a kid from birth to 18 years old. It looked like a lot. That's 7 vials of these things. I mean, I look at it, I go, holy smokes, that's a lot. That's why I think parents with young kids and they're in, like, they're over their head, they're looking at all of these in front. Like, I got to go till they're 18. Holy moly, I'm not going to make it, you know? There's a couple things with this. There's some encouragement and some sobriety for me with this. The encouragement is this, is that when I have a bad week with my kids, which I have had many times, it's just one of these. Okay, I've got all those to back up on, to do better at, to learn from. In fact, I've been through all this with one kid, and then I had another kid, so I learned things and did a little better. Now I'm on my third and final in the home and doing the best that we possibly can. But that's the sobering part for me. Because that's all I've got left with my third kid. Eventually, it's going to run out. Eventually, it hits empty. It's been empty for my oldest two, and my third one, this is all I've got. And I think, holy moly, the amount of work that I have to do in this many weeks, will I possibly get it all done? You know, will he take that in? Will he absorb that? What will happen? Yet to tell. But the challenge, I think, as a parent is we get really, really heavy on ourselves with the mistakes we make. And it's not that we shouldn't and be corrected by these things, but to realize also that it's more about what we're giving them and realize that there are a lot of weeks and you can have a bad week and you can recover from that because there's more weeks to have. There's more weeks to show love, to show forgiveness, to show grace, to practice, you know, appropriate discipline and accountability and trying to raise these children up to know God and to love God and to do well in the world around us. But we are called to honor our mother and our father. In Proverbs 10:1, it says that a wise child brings joy to a father and a foolish child brings grief to a mother. And it goes both ways. Obviously, a wise child brings joy to a mother and a foolish child brings grief to a father. It goes both ways. But we are to honor our mom and dad. So this is for the kids, okay? Sometimes kids are like, okay, so what's the practical ways that I can honor mom and dad? I think a great way that kids can honor mom and dad is that they can show respect to mom and dad. That's really, really important. Scriptures talk about that. I think it's an understanding from a kid when they show respect, they realize what a parent has done for them. The sacrifices that a parent makes in order to have a child. I mean, you think of even like a mother, like my own mother, like the amount of cold meals that she had or the sleepless nights that she had or just giving birth to me and the difficulty of pregnancy and birth and all of that. And she did all of that for me out of her love. And me honoring her is showing respect to her for what she has done for me. And that is just in that first moments of my life. But from then on, all the sacrifices that she has made and that my father has made, and it's showing them respect in that, the bigger picture of what they're trying to do when they were raising me. We can also obey our parents. I know this is just really not popular today, but I don't think it's ever been popular. But we need to obey our parents and trust that what they know is good and that it is helpful. I think even kids, no matter what age they are, they can identify children that are younger and the bad things or the bad choices that that kid wants to do that they think is a good thing for them to do. But a kid can't eat candy canes all day long. I mean, eventually it has to be some other kind of food, and we know that. But as a young kid, and that's all you want, that's all you want. But mom and dad are there to correct you, to put you on the right path. And so obedience to them is submitting to that they might know some things or they know ways to get through life that we need to learn. And as we get older as kids, living in the home, we take on some of those things and we do things, you know, correct. We actually put the right shoe on the right foot and the left shoe on the left foot. Earlier on, like, who cares? Just put on the other one, then we trip and fall, right? Or we don't tie our shoes and we learn, hey, I should tie my shoes. Or just buy shoes with elastic, whatever. But we learn these things and we learn them from our parents. So obedience is important. I think it's also a great way to honor our parents is to make them look good. And the way we do that is we do well in life. There's nothing that is more prideful for a parent than to hear from someone else what an awesome thing that your kid did out of your sight, without your pressure. And you hear that they served someone or helped someone or did something good. Sometimes a parent goes to like school to the parent-teacher conferences, and we're just welled up with all this anxiety because you don't know if a teacher's going to say, man, your kid is so disruptive and this and that, and you're just like, oh my goodness, I'm embarrassed by the behavior of my kid. Don't embarrass your parents. Like, this is the kind of thing, help them look good, do well in your life for the sake of your parents. One of the last things I would say for kids is talk to parents about your life. Nothing more frustrating for parents, kids, especially in their teen years, come home from school. How was your day? Fine. What'd you do today? Nothing. Did you learn anything in school? No. Well, how are your friends doing? Fine. Okay, well, hey, great chatting with you. You know, mom and dad want to know who you are and know about who you are. And so it's sharing some of those details about your life with them, like you would with friends, differently, obviously, but still sharing those things with your friends. I have a 23-year-old son who did none of that growing up and now will call me on the phone and be on for an hour and a half telling me about his life. And there's a part of me who just wants to say, dude, where was this back with the one-word answers and like what floodgate opened? You know, if you would have shared a little back then, we wouldn't be on the phone so long. But he now has to share these things, you know? It's good. It's very good. Last thing for kids is try to get a little bit interested in what mom and dad are interested in. I mean, it'll really help the relationship because mom and dad have been interested in your stuff, whether they have been or haven't. They probably concealed it from you. But they're trying to be interested in what you're interested in because it's what you're interested in. So it's something you're going to do as a family or things that they're trying to connect with you over the things that you're interested in. But you can do the same back to them. Find things that they're interested in. I mean, like for me personally, none of my family, none of my kids, except for my dad, but I mean, like for my immediate family, nobody likes motocross. And like that's the one sport that I want to watch. But when one of my kids like sits down and starts asking stupid questions about it, but they're sitting down and they're watching, it just means so much to me just that they're going to take the time to be interested in something that I'm interested in. So be interested in your parents and what they're doing, and that will be good. What about as adults? How can we honor our parents as adults? By far, number one thing is forgive them. You can honor your parents by forgiving them. Because in all the weeks that you were at home, they screwed up. And sometimes we hold those things against them. And it's time that we let those things go and forgive them whenever possible. And not just hang on to these things forever. Probably no more a parent than when you become a parent, you realize your mistakes. But it's a lot easier to expect our own children to forgive us than to make the connection that we should also be forgiving our own parents. But there are some challenges there, and I'll talk about those in just a moment. But forgiving our parents is big. Speaking well of our parents, not tearing them down in front of other people, speaking well about them. Sure, they've got their challenges, and some of those can be funny, but we want to speak well of them. Or speak to them, that's always good. Just like when you're a kid, like they do want to hear what's going on in your life. And as much as, you know, if my son calls and it's a long phone conversation, there's just something at the end of that. I just feel warm. I just feel like, my goodness, like we're connecting. I know about him. I know what's going on in his life and in his world. So speaking to our parents is great. I think seeking their wisdom is good too. You know, I know that they did things differently and they're from a different generation, but they still have a lot of wisdom. And just because you ask for their wisdom, just because you ask them their advice on something, doesn't mean you have to take it. But you may learn a different perspective or see it from a different angle. And it means a lot to them that their life and their experience matters enough for you to ask them their thoughts on something. So doing that can be a great way to honor your parents as an adult. And the final, and probably the one that's going to be the biggest for all of us with our parents that we're connected with or that have good relationships with our parents, is that the time will come when you will need to support and care for your parents. And that may mean financially or it may mean physically. They may be living in your home. You may be needing to help pay for their care or whatever it is. You'll have to be looking out for them and making sure what medications are on and whether they're doing well with those medications and if they're taking them properly. You'd be amazed how much you have to get involved in these things with them, but that's a way to love them, to care for them, and to honor them. But how do you honor a parent that has failed you? Or how do you honor a parent that has really failed in their role or their title as a parent? First of all, I would say that if you come from a home where you have a parent or parents that completely failed in their title of a parent, you didn't deserve that. That is all on them. You're the kid. It's not your responsibility. That was their responsibility, and they failed at it. In that, I would say one of the best things you can do to honor a parent that has failed in this way is to pray for that parent. The Bible tells us to pray for them, to pray for people that have hurt us even. So pray for them. Try to be an encouragement in that way in praying for them. And still, even though they have hurt you, and I don't mean to change what your story is, because your story is your story. If you're sharing your story with people that you love, the people that care about you, and you're talking about your past, and it's part of the healing process, and it's part of them understanding what you've been through, it's okay to talk about that, even though it puts your parents in a bad light, because those are the choices they made, but it's your experience that you had. It's okay to talk through those things and to share those things, but you want to be careful how you do it and not share it in a way that is to, the purpose being, is to tear them down. They're going to be torn down enough, let's say, just in people understanding what you went through. But then you know how those conversations change and it just becomes an attack on the person so that others will hate that person. You want to try to avoid that whenever possible. It's a big growth process for someone that's been hurt by another person. But the final piece with this is to break that cycle. That's a way to honor a parent as well. Break the cycle by doing well in the world and stopping the cycle of abuse, because hurt people generally hurt people. And those that have been abused have a tendency to be abusers. And if that's what you have experienced as a kid, it's time to break that cycle. And that is a way to honor your parents, is to say, I'm not going to be that abuser. You may not even have a connection or relationship with those people because of what they did and the hurt that they caused. It's not safe maybe to even be in their presence. But in that, you can stop the cycle of abuse. And that's a way that we can honor as well. It's challenging, but these are some things that we can do, even for parents that have failed the title of parent, to honor them. Other roles that you might have. You might have the role of brother or sister. One of the things when it comes to a brother and sister is there is this thing called sibling rivalry. You've heard of it, right? Sibling rivalry. It's where a brother and a sister, there's this constant competition that's going on. One's good in school, and so it's kind of lorded over the one that isn't. Or one's good in sports, and it's lorded over the one that isn't. Or one just is better at this, or better at that. And it's this constant fight. Do you know what the fight is for? Position with the parents. It's, I want to be the number one kid. I want to take the top spot. The best way to help with sibling rivalry in the home is, parents, don't play into it. Okay, don't play favorites. Don't try to make it where, let's say you have one kid that's really good at a particular sport, so you can't say, okay, we're going to put all of our family's time, money, and resources to this kid's activity, and nobody else gets anything, because it's just going to create this hierarchy. And I know that as parents, we say, you know, we don't have favorites. Like, there's no favorites with kids. And I'm sure that's true, or not. But no matter... Even if there's a kid that you connect better with because they're more like you or they're interested in things, you can't make it like, I like this kid more, or I give any hint of that. Because the minute we do that, we're just feeding into that sibling rivalry that goes on. I mean, don't make it like it was in my house where my parents told my sister that they loved me more than her. They didn't say that. If they did, it would have been a terrible situation. My sister and I had plenty of sibling rivalry. And there was a line on the seat, in the back seat of the car on vacations. And, I mean, she didn't cross it. I could cross it. She couldn't cross it. That was my rule. But you see, that's just our rivalry that we would have back and forth. And when my dad would be laughing hysterically in the front seat while my mom is trying to control it, it told me in my own brain, somehow this is okay to do, you know? To do one up on my sister here. We just got to stay away from that as best as we possibly can and help that. You know, the Bible's filled with sibling rivalry. I mean, look at the first two brothers, right? Cain and Abel. That sibling rivalry ended in one killing the other. So if your kids haven't killed each other, or if you never killed your brother and sister, you're doing pretty well, considering. There's a guy named Jacob and Esau, two brothers in the scriptures. They had a sibling rivalry. In fact, theirs was so bad that the mom actually helped facilitate this sibling rivalry. In fact, mom liked one of the sons better than the other, and the dad liked the other son better than the one that the mom liked. It didn't go well. And we have to fix these broken relationships in our families, these family dynamics. We have to fix these things. In fact, Jacob, that was a part of this sibling rivalry, he ended up getting his own family. And with his own family, because it was done to him, he did it in his own family. And he made one of his sons his favorite over the others. And the other brothers didn't go for this. And their sibling rivalry ended in them trying to kill him. They ended up tossing him in a hole and then selling him off as a slave. And they came home and told Jacob, the father, told him, oh, he got eaten by a wild animal. I mean, what a horrible situation that they had. But this sibling rivalry existed even in the scriptures and in those families. Romans chapter 12, verse 10. I've got two different verses for you because I want to highlight the brotherly love piece. But it says, love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. This is for all of us, not just in your family, but all of us. So all of us are to love each other with genuine affection. The word translated in Greek, genuine affection, is a word that is used to communicate the depth of a family relationship, which is why in the NIV they say, be devoted to one another in brotherly love, to try and show that this is a family type of connection of love. You're to love each other like you love your brother and sister. Some of you are like, oh, that's a pretty weak connection. It shouldn't be. Okay, this should be the deepest of connection, a kind of love that we would have for one another that nothing can break. That's the kind of love that we should have for one another. It's the example that's given here, and it's the way we're to live. It's about putting the needs of the family above yours. And remember, our definition for family in this series has been a group of people that love each other more than they love themselves, that they love each other in the family more than themselves. And when that happens, there's a very healthy dynamic that starts to develop. How about titles like husband and wife? I touched about that in week one, and if you weren't here for week one, I encourage you to go back and to listen to that online. If you go to the Hillcrest website, you can go to the messages area, and you can hear all the messages from this series or hundreds of messages from past series as well. So maybe you realize this, or maybe you haven't realized this, but if you do well with the titles that you're given in life, those titles that you have, it's going to kill selfishness within you. Every title that you take on, and if you do well with that, it's going to require you to not be selfish and to be selfless. You see, you start off as just a child, and as a child, it's like everything's about you. But even a single child growing up in a family does learn over time about sharing and give and take. But throw a sibling into that, or a close cousin, or whatever it might be, and all of a sudden when the sharing piece comes in, or the whole dividing line in the back seat of the car, you know, you learn a whole different level of selflessness, and your selfishness is challenged in that. Now, how about as a spouse? You know, do you learn to be selfless as a spouse? Yeah, you die to self. I mean, all of it. You give all of who you are to this other person. You surrender yourself to them in many ways. And I think that prepares you, if you do well for that, to be a parent. Because as a parent, it just doesn't seem to be an end of what you give. Everything you are, everything that you do seems to be focused on these kids. I can remember when my kids were in that 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old range, that when I had a birthday, it was at Chuck E. Cheese. Because that's where the kids wanted to go, and that's where they had fun. And I was like watching that dude dance on the stage. I'm like, what is going on in my world? Well, you're a dad. Take on that title. Because this is what it is. It's about being together as a family and celebrating, not the thing that I wanted to do, because it wasn't appropriate, apparently, to take 5-year-olds skydiving. And then as a grandparent, what actually goes back the other way, you get to be selfish all over again as a grandparent. It's a pretty sweet gig. But if you don't do well with these titles, if you end up staying selfish in these titles, there's a good chance you're going to lose these titles. If you're selfish in these titles, you'll lose the title of husband or wife. If you stay selfish in these titles, you can lose the title of mom or dad. I don't want to be dense here in what can be some of the most painful and difficult aspects of some of these titles. Because there are some people here that are never going to hold titles that they want to hold. and you desperately want to hold certain titles, and you may never hold them. You may never be a husband. You may never be a wife. You may never be a mom. You may never be a dad. And I think in that, I want to encourage you to allow the titles that you do have to shape who you are and to shape your life. And don't put your life on hold or act like nothing matters until you have this future title that you want to have, because you may or may not ever have that title. You may not ever be a grandparent. I don't know. But you do have titles that you have, and you need to embrace those and let those shape who you are. Don't see yourself as incomplete because you don't have a title you want. Don't see yourself as a second-class citizen because you're not. But hold on to and do well in the titles you do have. I think the most painful moments in life, though, are when we lose a title to death. When we lose a title because of a death in our lives, that can be the most painful thing. When we have a husband that loses a wife, or a wife that loses a husband, or a parent that loses a child, a son or a daughter, or maybe you lose a sister or a brother. Because not only do you lose your title, but you lose that title holder. It can be very, very painful and very, very difficult as we try to process what life now looks like without that title or without that title holder. And there's so much value is put into that, so much meaning put into it, and it just feels like it's ripped away from us. And the scriptures would say that in those moments, the church needs to stand in the gap and be that title holder for you. That when a child loses a mother or a child loses a father, the church needs to step in and be that title holder and take on in those, especially initial stages, on how to be that mother for that child or that father for that child and bring that support into that. And when you have someone that you love that you've lost, the church has to step into that and be that help and be that support for you. Because this is what God calls us to do. In Psalm 68, 5 through 6, talking about God, says he's a father to the fatherless, and he's a defender of widows. And this is God, whose dwelling is holy. And God places the lonely in families. And as the body of Christ, as the church, that we are to continue the work of Christ, which means that we have to be the father to the fatherless, and we have to be the defender of widows, and we have to be the ones that welcome the lonely, those that don't have a home, don't have a family, don't have that connection, and invite them in, that we bring the lonely into the families. And this is what the church is supposed to be. In Isaiah 49:15, very powerful verse, says, "Never can a mother forget her nursing child. Can she feel no love for the child that she has born? But even if that were possible," and these are God's words, he says, "I would not forget you." God is saying that no matter what happens in life, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, no matter what you experience, that he will always love you, always. And that his love that he has for you is greater and stronger and more committed than the love of a mother, if that's even possible. It is that strong. Nothing can separate you from the love of God. So it shouldn't be surprising to any of us that the greatest key for having a great family and the key to any great relationship is love. So as we close out our time here, I want to encourage you with a couple of things. I want to encourage you in some ways that you can show love. Practically, maybe when it comes to mom and dad, especially for you kids, honor mom and dad. Like, make Mother's Day and Father's Day a big deal. Because it's the one day that we really honor all that they did for us. Even as an adult, make Mother's Day and Father's Day a big deal for your parents that are still alive. Because they did make a sacrifice. Even for a mother or a father that did poorly, the one good thing they did is you. And so it's honoring that on Mother's Day and Father's Day. And I know kids, you're like, well, when's Kids Day? It's every day, okay? But this is one day for mom, one day for dad. The worst thing a kid could possibly do is on Mother's Day or Father's Day saying, we're gonna do this and do that, and they go, ooh, that kid should not eat for a year, okay? Like, come on, like, this is the person that has given so much for you, and so we honor them on Mother's Day and Father's Day. Also, we have holiday season coming up. I want to encourage you to take advantage of this holiday season and forgive or ask for forgiveness. Because as complex as the dynamics are in your family and those broken relationships, and as much as if I was to ask you about those and you would tell me all the stories and all the years and decades and how all this has become what it is, I'm going to boil it down to you, okay? Without even knowing your situation, but this is 100% true for you. If you have a broken family relationship and this holiday season, that's going to be a confrontational kind of a thing, I want you to know that if you have a family dynamic that is challenging, it's because you either need to forgive or ask for forgiveness. And it is no more complicated than that. But doing that may be one of the hardest things you have to do. But it's because you either need to ask for forgiveness or you need to offer it. And both of those we hold hostage from our families many times, and we shouldn't. We have to be forgiving people. I also want to encourage you, maybe in your own family dynamics or in the titles that you hold, to challenge yourself to do one thing differently in that title that is less selfish, that is more selfless. What's one thing in your title that you can do? I'm sure there's probably a lot of things you could do, but what is just one? And just work on that one thing. Do better at your title today than you did yesterday. And own your titles. Live up to those titles. Do well within those titles. Accept the titles you have, and don't put your life on hold for the titles that you want to have that you don't yet have. And if you've lost a title or you've lost a title holder in your life, turn to God for support and help, and the church will also turn to you and try to fill that gap for you. Because God is a God of love, and he loves you. Let's pray. Father God, we thank you for your love and for your grace. And I ask that you would help us in our titles and those titles that we hold, that we would do well with those, that we would be less selfish, that we would care about others more than ourselves, these family dynamics and relationships. We thank you for the example that you have shown us, and help us to show that to others. Lord, for those that have failed us in their titles, help us to forgive, but also help us to move forward and not let the baggage of that or the damage of that damage our future relationships. And we thank you that you are a God that loves and cares for us, that you are our Father, a good, good Father. We thank you that you show us that. And as we go from this place, Lord, help us to love, help us to accept it and to receive it and to give it to others. Help us in the hurts that we have of those titles that we've lost or the title holders that we've lost, and to surrender those to you too. And we love you in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, that concludes our Family 30 series, and I do hope that your family is better after 30 days than it was at the beginning. Next week, we start a new series called When Pigs Fly, and next week, there will actually be pigs flying in here. And I was told before first service, someone came up to me just nonchalantly and said, Pastor Doug, the pigs are in the baptismal. Yeah. I just think it's cool that I go to a church where someone can say that, and that's just like second nature. Like, oh yeah, pigs are in the baptismal. It's actually kind of like redneck church here today at Hillcrest, because Pastor Doug, myself, parked on the rocks today. We've got pigs in a baptismal. We've got Burke's, what do you call that thing? The Thunder Castle up on the corner there. And then our trash can was filled up from the craft fair, so now it's overflowing with trash bags everywhere. So it's kind of like Redneck Sunday here at Hillcrest. So we hope you've enjoyed experiencing our redneck opportunities for you today. But next week, we do start a great new series. We're going to have a lot of fun with it. And so we invite you back next week. God bless you. Thank you for coming today. You are dismissed.